Welcome to the CircuitPython Show. I'm your host, Paul Cutler. This episode, I'm joined by Todd Kurt. Todd is a co-founder of ThingM, a ubiquitous computing and Internet of Things device studio based in Pasadena in San Francisco. He is creator of the popular Blink One USB notification light and BlinkM, the smart LED prototyping device. Todd is a co-founder of the Los Angeles hackerspace CrashSpace, the author of the book Hacking Roomba, and an active member in the CircuitPython community with his CircuitPython Tricks webpage. Todd, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me again. This is great.
I used to listen to a podcast that when they had a repeat guest, they would officially become a friend of the show. I'd like to welcome you as my first official friend of the show.
Thank you. I feel very honored.
It's been almost 2 years since we first chatted, and way back in season one. And one of the big things that's changed in CircuitPython since you were last on the show is the addition of SynthIO. This past August, we were on a panel together where we discussed SynthIO, and I'll link to that in the show notes for anyone who wants to do a deep dive into SynthIO. But really briefly, what is SynthIO in CircuitPython?
That was CircuitPython Day. That was a great sort of constructed holiday. It's a great time period now. But SynthIO is a synthesis, an audio synthesis, musical synthesis library core module, I should say, in CircuitPython. And in CircuitPython, core modules are things that are built into CircuitPython. They're written in C usually, and it means you don't have to do anything. It's just there. And it's incredible. It's polyphonic. It's got filters. It can do arbitrary waveforms. It's got LFOs and modulators. Pretty much all the things you would want in a synthesizer, it's got. And I've been having lots of fun with it since it was in a pull request in like January, February.
Yeah, you've put together a tips and trick page for SynthIO, just like you did for CircuitPython, and you've also designed a couple of boards to take advantage of SynthIO. Tell me about some of the boards that you've worked on.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so I've designed a whole ton of boards. Like, of the ones that are kind of useful, I usually do an extra run and put the remainders up on my Tindy store. So people that want to get those, they can get them there. I sort of have two main interests in these boards. One is to make the sort of really easy to build learning platforms that people with like a Cutie Pie or a Raspberry Pi Pico can just drop it down, add a few extra other easy to add parts, and they've got a little synthesizer board and they can like write their own synthesizers. I've not been working too hard in making a fully fledged thing for these kinds of boards, because I think of it more as it's like an experimentation platform, though, that like, you know, some other like these Arduino experimenter kits from, you know, several years ago. And the other kind of focus I've been on are, what's the thinnest circuit board, synthesizer, MIDI controller that I can make? Because I have often carried a little MIDI controller or a little synthesizer gizmo in my backpack or my book bag. And, you know, I don't want it to get damaged. So I don't want knobs sticking out. I don't want it to be a bare circuit board. And so a lot of my stuff has been like, what's the thinnest thing I can do? And so on my Tindy store, there's a couple of examples of these very thin MIDI controllers. And the most recent one has been this fully enclosed little CapTouch synthesizer that I had 50 built, that I gave out as to the 50 attendees of our sketching and hardware conference that happened a couple months ago. Because there's a bunch of friends that I know for like the last almost 20 years, and I wanted to infect them with synthesizers.
And what was their reaction to it?
I think a lot of them are pretty good. Of course, now we're all old enough that a lot of them have kids, so they kind of gave them off to their kids.
Gotcha.
But I should be having a version of that board up in the Tindy store as well. It's basically, you know, a octave and a half CapTouch keyboard with a couple of modifier keys. It's got some reverse mount LEDs to let you know when you're touching the pads, and then a couple of example synthesizers that you can install onto it. Like, one's a wavetable synthesizer that makes really weird, cool, like space noises, and another is a drum machine. And I'm hoping that I'm going to do a little bit more and get a little bit more interesting examples up there that are like kind of full synthesizers, because I think you can do a lot with this little platform. And it's like no parts that stick up. So you can just like slide it in like you would a pencil case into your bag, and it'll be safe.
That's cool. Last year on our old podcast, The Bootloader, you shared your experience attending Hackaday SuperCon. You were there this year too, just a couple of weeks ago. What were some of your favorite talks at SuperCon?
Yeah, SuperCon's really great. Have you, like, you should come some year.
I should. I really should.
Like, you and me, we only know each other online. We've not been in the same physical room in the same place. We've been in the same Discord channel tons of times.
Right.
And so there are so many people that I know in the larger sort of hardware hacking community that I only know in this way. And SuperCon has been the one of the few cases where I get to meet some of these people, you know. And so like one of the cool things is Geek Mom, who Deborah Ansell, she lives in Los Angeles, and so I've seen her a few times in reality. But she has a small business with Ben Henke, I think, and Jason Koons. I think we covered them, their product, the Lux Levier, in one of our Bootloader podcasts.
We did.
And so Jason Koon, he makes these beautiful pieces of LED art that fit in the palm of your hand. These little, like, they're not grids of LEDs. They're like a Fibonacci spiral of LEDs. And they just are jewels. It's like and because he uses such small LEDs, these little like 1 millimeter by 1 millimeter LEDs, but they're like neopixels. The LEDs become a surface, a texture rather than like individual LEDs. It's just incredible. And so I got to actually meet him and hang out with him and hold some of these things in my hand and just marvel at them. Like it's one thing to see pictures of them on websites, but another thing to actually like, you know, gaze into it.
Right.
And that was, and so just seeing all these people that I've only interacted with on Mastodon or Discord or whatever is really great.
I know, looking at SuperCon from afar, even some of my former guests have been there, right? Thea Flowers was there, Joey Castillo was there, you're there. So like, that gives me a reason to go when I actually know a couple of people already too. So like you said, I have to find a way to get there in the next year or two.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed, hadn't seen before, is in some of the talks and in some of the idle conversation, people would just say, oh yeah, and we programmed this with CircuitPython. Like it was no longer a special thing. We're like, you know, we're out of this evangelization phase where it's like, hey, you should try this weird thing called CircuitPython. It's like now people are just using it because, oh, it's a good enough tool and we can use it now to do a lot of the projects that we've done in the past. And that was really nice that it was just like, oh yeah, it's just another tool.
That's great to hear. Tell me about some of the Lightning talks that you attended.
One of the coolest things they did this year was a Lightning talk. So not everyone has the time to like prepare an hour long talk in front of hundreds of people. You know, that's pretty intimidating. And so during one of the days, they just said, hey, if anybody wants to give a Lightning talk for like 10 minutes, come on up. And maybe you had prepared slides. I think most people had prepared some slides. I think some people didn't so much, but they were all great. It was like hour and a half, 10 people. And it was everything from, you know, Scotty of Strange Parts talking about how his brain injury led him to whole new hacking experiences, to, you know, Allie was up there with her Pokemon ball purse. It was just like a purse Pokemon ball, but it also is remotely controlled light up neopixel craziness, to Tina Belmont taught us all how synthesizers worked she's been doing synthesizers for like over a decade. So it's like, you know, here's someone who actually knows sense. And yeah, it just was from all over. It was like one of the best kind of condensed group of talks. And the video's up on YouTube right now because Hackaday streamed, the SuperCon has sort of two stages, the main stage and the design lab stage. And the main stage, they live stream and keep the live streams up for a while. And so for the time being, you can go to the youtube.com/hackaday and click on the live tab. And then there's all the talks from the main stage of SuperCon. So you can get those. And so that was great. The other one, another one that was on the main stage was this hacker named Sprite. I forget his real name. It's like Yorn. Maybe. Yeah, I can't.
we'll find it and link to it in the show notes and give him credit.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of the Uber hackers. He works for Espressif. He is responsible for a bunch of the really cool FPGA hacks you might've seen on Hackaday. And he continued that trend with his talk was about taking the old 1982 vector video game system called Vectrex. That, you know, back then took cartridges, because that's everything took cartridges, and he reverse engineered how it all worked and then recreated how that worked in an FPGA. And to be an appropriate emulation, instead of boringly driving a LCD screen, he figured out he found a little like tiny portable right angle CRT and had an analog stage that drove the CRT the way that like the real Vectrex Vectorscope did. So it was like an analog output of these, you know, very clean lines that's indicative of a Vectorscope output. And it was all handheld, ran off a battery. It's just amazing. It had these little it would play actual Vectrex cartridges, but also would play all of these. There's a Vectrex demo scene of people making new stuff. and he found a bunch of that and was able to slot in those custom demo scene cartridges. And it just was like this tour de force of engineering.
That is so cool.
Really brand new stuff. Yeah, really brand new stuff and FPGAs driving really old stuff of like tiny old CRTs from video phones.
Now, I got to ask you about a talk that was about the Cuddly Companion Bots. With a title like that, I have to know more.
Yeah, so Angela Sheehan, she makes this really interesting sort of snake, not a snake, it's like a fuzzy boa companion bot. So a companion bot, if you've never heard, is a robot that you have on your person somehow. You usually wear it kind of on your shoulder, or maybe it's kind of like it's a slung thing, like kind of the way a purse would be, or you'd wear, maybe it's a backpack. And it's sort of the people who make these call them like your companion robots. So the way you have maybe a companion animal. I find it fascinating because robots are hard and they're noisy and they take a lot of power and they are not really amenable to being so close to a person. But here they are making these devices that will sit on their shoulder and have to interact with the more soft human world. You know, that means that, like, in the way they move and the way they interact with the other people, with the person that they're on. So Angela's talk was about like how to do some of that, and that was really fascinating because I love robots. I'm not interested in making a companion bot, but all the people in the bot community are really cool. It's like Angela and AJ, which you know, and Allie, who did the Pokemon Ball thing, and Geek Mom, like as representatives of the companion bot community, they're just, you know, wonderful.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah, and so yeah, so it's just that video is also up on YouTube, so you can watch her talk right now too.
I mentioned Thea Flowers earlier. What was her talk on?
Oh, man. Okay, Stargirl, aka Thea Flowers. For the last year or so, she's been working on making a web viewer for KiCad schematics and PCBs. You think like, oh, that's pretty easy. You know, you just read the file format and you just, you know, turn that into an SVG. And no. Like her talk was hilarious. It should have been a main stage talk so we could have a video of it right now. It'll like they'll upload the video of it eventually. It was just amazing because you know, KiCad, it's 30 years old. You know, it's this amazingly long-lived code base that's been touched by hundreds of people. And so the fact that it runs as well as it does is amazing.
Yeah, I had no idea that it's been around that long.
Yeah, yeah, it's just, I mean, granted, the people that wrote most of it work at CERN. You know, they're some of the smartest people on the planet. So, but it's like any long-lived code base has a bunch of different ways of doing a single thing, because you know, you do it one way, and then like sometime later you figure out a better way to do it, but you have to keep the old way because of compatibility issues, and then suddenly it's a couple decades later and you've got a couple of piles of legacy stacks you have to deal with. And so in navigating that to make it so the web viewer works, she had to figure a lot of that out. Her talk about how she went through it was really nerdy and really fun and really funny.
That's pretty cool. SuperCon is known for its badges. What was the badge like this year?
I don't know if you've seen pictures of it yet, but it looks kind of like an old Tektronix scope. And these scopes, they had a round CRT screen in like the top left, and then they had these big knobs and buttons that kind of surrounded it, and it was a sort of a vertical orientation of the whole instrument. So like a lot of the test equipment nowadays has sort of a horizontal orientation with like the screen to the left and the knobs to the right. This thing is vertically oriented, where the screen was kind of the top left and the buttons were on the bottom. That's kind of what the badge looks like. It has this round LCD and then a bunch of buttons and some little like connectors on the side. And then when you turn it over, you see that it's a Raspberry Pi Pico and a couple of support chips. And it's a pretty brilliant little hack. There's an arbitrary waveform generator that I think is written. So the whole thing's running MicroPython.
Okay.
The way you kind of interact with it is there's sort of two parts to the badge. There's the arbitrary waveform generator that outputs an X and a Y signal. And then there's the scope part that reads an X and a Y signal. And so you can just use it as an oscilloscope. You can just feed in an X and a Y and then get cool Lissajou vectorscope patterns. Or you can use the arbitrary waveform generator to give you like an X scanning time base to then be your X, and then have then your signal, whatever your signal you're measuring, is your Y, and then you get like more of a standard oscilloscope readout where the scan is a constant time, and then the vertical y-axis is showing you what the voltage is over time. And you can do all of that without doing any code on the badge. You just like hook up wires and press a few buttons, and it's basically like an old oscilloscope. It's all like got green phosphor look, and it's as the traces move, it's got this cool phosphor fade effect. That's like this running is like a separate process on the second core of the RP2040 that's in the Pico or something. It's incredible. But of course, it's all open and you can hack it all. And so I was like, I hacked around with it a little bit, but I'm not very fast with MicroPython. And so one of the first things I did is I just blew MicroPython away and installed CircuitPython because I know how to run these GC9A01 round LCDs. I've been playing with those for a couple of years.
Sure.
So I did a bunch of little dumb hacks with that.
And then you created a capacitive touch sensor to go along with it?
Sort of. I've been playing around, like I mentioned, with the boards that I made. I've been playing around with CapTouch buttons for a long time now, because in CircuitPython, it's so easy. You just use the TouchIO core module that's built in, and you say, hey, I want to turn this pin into a touchpad, and then it'll give you a true-false value whenever somebody touches the pad. And so it's super simple. But I knew that there was ways of doing more complex sensors with just a couple of CapTouch pins. And so you can actually make a slider, a capacitive touch slider, with just two pins if the pads are shaped in a certain way so that you get sort of a ratio between the two pins depending on where your finger touches. And similarly, you can make a rotary control, a touch wheel, sort of like the old iPod touch wheels, with just three pins. And so I'm like, and this is a thing that's been known for like 20 years or something. I've not played with it much. I'm like, okay, I'll just spin up a quick board, and I'll have it so that the pinout matches the little expansion pinout of the badge, so that in theory you could just plug it onto the badge and have it work. I got the boards back like 2 or 3 days before SuperCon, soldered up real quick once I got the badge, and yeah, it worked great.
Oh, that's
I was like
cool
so surprised. Yeah, it was like you know, 20 lines of CircuitPython to do the simple math to turn the three sensor readings into a angle. Yeah, so that's up on the GitHub. There'll be a link to it hopefully in the show notes.
Absolutely.
And I'm working on a board because I'm so excited now by like, oh, I can do like various types of interfaces with capacitive touches, not just buttons, that I'm working on a little sort of CapTouch Explorer board that'll have some wheels and some sliders and some other things. See how that turns out.
Now, there was some controversy around the lack of diversity in the speaker lineup at SuperCon this year. Not having been there myself, was it fair criticism?
Yeah. You can just go to the SuperCon website and you'll see that all the speakers, they're mostly white guys, you know. it's there's a Carrie of Alpenglow has a really good thread on Mastodon about this, and because she's been a speaker in the past and she comes every year and she was there this year, but it's really hard because when a community has sort of a default kind of member, you know, like you and me, we're kind of the default kind of member. We're sort of middle-aged white guys,
right?
You know, that's kind of your you know, they're a stereotypical hacker. And when you're that, it's not hard to get the default to submit talk proposal when they just say, hey, here, our talk proposal website is open, submit a talk, you know, cause you know, we have the time. We also feel comfortable in submitting a talk. If we can get over our own personal, like, oh, I have a fear of public speaking,
right.
but we mostly feel welcome in the community, but there are so many other people that are part of the community, but they don't feel welcome. And, you know, usually these are the non-white guys. And so like, how do we get more of those people that are in the community, but don't feel welcome? How do we welcome them in? And we really have to do the effort to make sure they know they're welcome. And that's hard. It's a proactive reaching out rather than a, hey, come submit your talk to us. You have to actually go out and get people. And that's hard.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. It's very hard. And even with the podcast, I'm always trying to keep that diversity, you know, and inclusion top of mind and making sure that I try and balance those guests out. And there's been some criticism of the Python podcast ecosystem as well of not being mm-hmm. as diverse as the Python community is.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's something that you have to work on. You have to have it top of mind and you have to keep working on it and you have to let people know that you're going to be fine. You're going to do great. and welcome them with open arms.
Yeah, it's really hard because a lot of us are introverts. It's hard to reach out to people in general. You know, and just say, hey, you know, it's like this is the problem that we had at Crash Space, the hackerspace that I founded, co-founded, that, you know, people would come in off the street and just say, hey, is this a hackerspace? And we'd be like, yeah. And then we would all turn back to whatever project we're working on. You know, it's like, that's not how you welcome new people. To welcome new people, if they come in the door, you have to like get up and welcome them and show them around, you know, and say, here's where the laser cutter is. Here's where the 3D printer is, you know?
Exactly. You're absolutely right.
But it's so easy when you're in your head, you're focused on a thing and you're like, I just want to solve my problem.
Well, we're almost out of time. And the last question I always ask is, which board do you reach for when starting a new project? And in over 24 episodes, you're the only person that's chosen a Funhouse and an Itsy Bitsy. Are those still your go-to picks, or is there a different board that you reach for these days?
Yeah, probably these days for, I'd say, general CircuitPython work, I would choose a Raspberry Pi Pico. Because of the fact that they're sort of sold at cost at $4, they're like a really cheap way of just trying stuff out and lowering that barrier of fear of like, oh, what if I fry something? What if I burn this board up? It's like, well, you've burned up $4 if you have. but also, like, the space of things you can do with a Raspberry Pi Pico is really large. And so it's a really great board. Even if you're not doing CircuitPython, like, you can do a lot of really great stuff. In Arduino, you can use the Pico SDK to get really low level. It's got that PIO functionality that's sort of like a little bit of programmable logic inside of the Pico that you can do like really fast protocol-y type stuff. And so it's a very interesting board. You can do the PIO stuff in CircuitPython even, which is amazing. But it doesn't have Wi-Fi. And there's the Pico W that has Wi-Fi, but I think an ESP32 board would be better if you want to do Wi-Fi. And for Wi-Fi CircuitPython,
I'd probably recommend an S3 board.
Yeah, an ESP32 S3, and then like which one? So like my default is a QtPie ESP32 S3, but I think Wi-Fi devices need some sort of a display, because there's this whole onboarding problem of how do you get it onto your net. And like having a display is really useful for that. So I guess maybe if we're talking Adafruit products, the reverse feather, the reverse TFT ESP32 S3 feather, I think. There's also a really good LilyGo board that has an ESP32 S3 in it, I think. There's so many choices. ESP32 S3, and if you need a display, pick one. If not, a QtPie.
Those are all good picks. Todd, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you for listening. For show notes, visit www.circuitpythonshow.com, and transcripts are available in your favorite podcast app. Until next time, stay positive.